My name's Traylor Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. I don't normally do this, but I'm going to start off with a couple of disclaimers right up front. One is, with age, I've gotten a little bit hard of hearing, so I'm not sure how I'm projecting or not projecting. The other thing is there's nobody in this room who's more anxious for this meeting to get over with than I am. I was thinking about, you know, how we do. I always tell my guys when they're telling their first story that, you know, there's three stories we tell: the one we plan to tell, the one we tell, and after it's over, the one we wish we'd have told. And I was thinking that, in AA, sometimes we hear you say, "Hey, you're in the right place." Well, if you're in this room expecting to leave, being rocketed into the fourth dimension, you're in the wrong place. You're in the wrong place. You know, I'm just going to give you one sort of religious thing, and that's one beatitude. Blessed are those who expecteth little, for they are seldom disappointed. So I'll kind of start with, I tend to not do all the normal stuff that people tend to do at the first of a talk. We all know that. Yes, I'm sober. Yes, I've got a home group. Yes, I got a sponsorship chain that we've traced through all this chain back to Bill W. We got all that genealogy. But all that really doesn't matter, because really the sobriety is on me. To spend a whole lot of time talking about my past, I don't think it's very beneficial. I probably always will a little bit, but don't intend to. I want to start with coming to my first meeting. In my very first meeting, the first thing I did in Alcoholics Anonymous was violate a tradition. I had no desire to stop drinking. The first night that I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, none. I think there were two major reasons that I came to my first meeting. One was to get some of the heat off my back, which was very inappropriately being placed on me, because it had nothing to do with me. They just hadn't yet seen the errors of their ways. And what little bit I knew about AA, I felt like if all of y'all drank a little bit from time to time, the main thing I would get was what I desperately needed so bad, which is understanding and sympathy. I was looking for sympathy at my first meeting. I want y'all to tell me that I wasn't that bad a guy. That maybe this thing was a little bit overblown. But it's fairly normal to drink from 14 to 40. It's fairly normal to the last 5 years of that drinking be a quarter Jack Daniels a day, with Budweiser's just being sort of appetizers. I thought it was fairly normal. I had a great relationship to God. I prayed to Him nearly every night, "Please not let me wake up." And He wasn't doing it fast enough. So I thought I'd help Him out. I've always been big on helping God out, right? So I thought a 38 Smith & Wesson might get his attention and aid the process a little bit. Till I found out one of my character defects, or character assets, depending on how you want to look at it, and that is that basically behind all the bravado, I'm a coward. And when I had the barrel in my mouth with a hammer cocked back, it was either God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, or me being too chicken But, you know, one thing about us alcoholics, we have great imaginations, at least I do, and a high degree of perseverance. So I was trying to think what was the best way to handle this. And I was a little bit younger. I'm about 70. I guess here's where I'll do a little bit of it. I got sober July the 5th, 1994. And I was 40 years old when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just turned 29 in July, and I'll be 29 in the program. I'll be 70 in February. So let's see. I forgot what I was fixing to tell you, except what it was at the time. Man, I'm jumping around here because, you know, one of the things that convinced me I didn't have a problem was when I come in here and they tell me to listen to the similarities and not the differences. And I started listening to people share, and I was going like, God almighty, these are some bad people. You know, my story of getting to the bottom and my story of recovery are not remarkable at all. They really aren't. But that was one of my part of my denials. Good Lord, I hadn't done anything like that. But I couldn't see what I was doing. That's the truth. That's the problem with this disease. I could not see what I was doing. So I figured the best way to end this thing was, some of y'all probably came through there on your way down from wherever. I decided that I'd take my car out to on I-20. Out to the Bobby Jones Expressway and get it a little bit north of 100 and stick it in a bridge abutment. Figured that'd be pretty quick. Till I swerved out of that a few times. My old friend Coward has come back to play. But here's the coup de grace. This is a suicide of all suicides. My father was in the program. My father was a psychiatrist. That should tell you about how well adjusted and emotionally stable I am, having been raised by a psychiatrist. He had gotten into the program with a big misunderstanding over here at University Hospital. They had suggested he either go to treatment or lose his license to practice medicine. And so he watched his boy for 11 more years get to this point. But anyhow, back to Pop. I said, I know how to do this thing and do it right. Back in the day, doctors used to get a lot of samples. They don't do that as much anymore. And Daddy's house was an apothecary beyond belief. So I figured I'd go to his house, steal a lot of his samples, which I had no idea what they were. I did not consult a PDR, a physician's desk reference. I just knew, being a psychiatrist, he had a lot of stuff that was pretty exotic compared to regular doctors. So I plotted my course. I would go to the beach. I had a pretty fancy new car at that time, and this is what I was going to do. I was going to ride down to the beach. I was going to have the car all packed up. I was going to get not quite on the beach. I was going to get in some of those back rural areas around the beach, go down a long road, and the car would be fully equipped. And I'd have the music just right, and the air conditioning just right, and I would drink till I lost any ability, and I had all the pills in like a big bowl, and it was my intention just to start taking them. And this is the level of sickness I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, well, what'll happen is hopefully I'll just go to sleep. And in a few days, they'll get to looking for me and won't be able to find me. then it'll dawn on them that probably I took off for the beach, because I don't know about any of y'all, but from time to time I was a runner. And the way I had it figured, after a few days at the beach in August, gas would finally run out of that Cadillac, and it'd get kind of warm in there. And by the time they found me, they could see all their faults of how they had destroyed my life. That's the level of sickness I brought to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've gotten moderately better. Moderately. I came to my first meeting. Dad brought me. He did what we all should do, which I know now. Blood cannot work with blood in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He got me to y'all. He left me with y'all. That was the extent of his involvement with my recovery. So I was a crackerjack AA from the start. I came to meetings religiously every Monday through Thursday. Monday through Thursday. Didn't need y'all too much on the weekends. Had other things I needed to catch up on. And the 8:30 meeting didn't get over till 9:30. And I wasn't going to drink right in front of you. I thought y'all had some pretty strange ideas about drinking. So normally I couldn't start till about 9:45. And after about 2 months of this, I said, this AA is working pretty good. I normally start around 5:30 or 6, and I ain't starting till about 9:45. Well, I've cut my drink in half in two. This AA is good stuff. And then one day, it happened. I was at a lunch meeting, and at the end of the meeting, I don't know how to describe it other than to say I just absolutely fell apart. The weight of all of it just finally just crushed me. And I went to see a guy who I'd been auditioning to be my sponsor. I felt he was worthy of me. And I went to see him, and he says, I'll sponsor you under one condition. And I said, what is that? That you go to treatment. And to this day, I don't know why I said yes. Because I know a lot more now, not only through AA, but some other things that I've been associated with in life. There's only two things that you can die from withdrawing from. Alcohol is one of them. Benzos is the other one. There's a lot of exotic stuff out there that when you're withdrawing, you might wish you would die, but you ain't going to. When I checked in the treatment center, my blood pressure was 180 over 160. They decided that I needed to go to sleep. Guy walks out with a needle about that big, so no problem, I roll up my sleeves. He shakes his head. About 3 days later, I came to. I don't remember my first 3 days of sobriety. But I do know this, while I was in that treatment center, I bet the rest of my life on Alcoholics Anonymous. At 40 years old, I said, I'm going to bet the rest of my life on Alcoholics Anonymous. got my feelings hurt in treatment. Imagine that. Being sensitive like I am, and still am. They did it a little bit different in treatment than we do in the rooms. To help you see your defects of character, they put you in a circle. Your chair was in the middle and everybody else was around you in the circle. And you couldn't answer and they get to take pot shots at you. That's one tradition I'm glad hadn't come into the rooms without perhaps. Matter of fact, this has cured me back so far. I hadn't thought about this in a long time. We had a nurse in there. Any of y'all seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? Nurse Ratchet. I had a bad habit back in those days and still do because I'm so super important, you know. I'm constantly looking at my watch, you know. Constantly. And she looked at me in that white uniform and says, "Mr. Johnson, do you have a plane to catch?" The program had not had a chance to work me into the charmer that I am today. I said, "No, ma'am. Actually, this is a very expensive asshole detector." "And it seems like every time you talk, it keeps going on." I was not voted patient of the week. So I got back to Augusta. Oh, the other part of my hurt feelings. None of y'all called me or visited me while I was up there. I forgot to tell you where I was, how long I'd be gone, because I didn't know how long I'd be gone. But I got well once my insurance ran out. So anyhow, I came back to Augusta and I settled on the National Hills group, and it worked very well for me. At the time I was sporting, my kids were 7 and 11, my two daughters, and I never believed that recovery should be convenient, but I do believe this. If it is convenient, the odds of my participating are probably more likely. And it just so happened at our 8:30 meeting, our kids were young enough, you know, we had had supper, homework, about ready to put them to bed anyhow. So I went up there and they had suggested that I do 90 and 90. Except for 1 year spent in Alaska and a year and a half working at a treatment center, I've done 90 and 90 for 26 and a half years. Wow. You can either deduce one or two things. I'm either pretty slow or I don't have much of a life. But it's not that. Any of y'all who know and love this fellowship, I don't even have to say the words. You know what it is and what it's about and what it does to you. Suddenly, the thoughts that used to drive us and dominate us or cast aside, and a new series of motives. That's the other thing I'm going to tell you I hate about getting old. I used to know that book, and I could quote page numbers, and now I can't remember squat. I remember portions of it, and right now it'd be a great time to tell you one of my favorite ones, because when I'm about the rest of my life, no sponsor ever told me to read this. If he did, I wasn't hearing. But I read through there, and on page 85, I found my marching instructions for the rest of my life. It's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels. I'm headed for trouble if I do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. I'm not cured of alcoholism. What I have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. That one will be with me till I die. I don't think I'm going to forget that one. I don't think that, no, I know I'm not. I don't think I'm going to go through an elaborate discussion of the steps. I think I'm going to hit some highlights. You know, suffice it to say that I think I've worked step one. Two, came to believe power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. I hear different things, but whether I'm right or whether wrong, what I'd like to believe is Dr. Silkworth says we have a twofold disease. Session of my analogy of the body. Step one takes care of the body part when I put it down. Obsession of mind, to me, I could be wrong, but it's worked for me, is that obsession. It's that obsession. And when I was about 4 months in, it was about this time of year, it was approaching Thanksgiving. I was scared to death, first holiday sober. And I prayed and I talked. And I prayed and I talked and I prayed and I talked. And like many things in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't recognize it's happened until it's after it's over with and I'm looking backwards. And I made it through the 4 days of Thanksgiving weekend with all the food, fun, alcohol, and everything else. And then about Monday or Tuesday of the next week, I got home from work, and I walked into the kitchen, and I looked at the refrigerator, and all of a sudden, I wasn't doing the romantic dance with the refrigerator every time I looked at it. And I said, you know, I didn't drink. Matter of fact, I hadn't thought about drinking. And I knew the obsession had been lifted, and I knew that did not come from me. And God love y'all all. I knew it didn't come from y'all in the fellowship either. Y'all did me a lot of good, but you did not take my obsession. I believe God just, without a doubt. Got to step three. Book says we can do it with some other people besides our sponsor. I elected to do it with my Baptist minister. I didn't tell you that when I was younger, I'd had an off and on relationship on a spiritual basis. I got very involved in Young Life when I was in high school. I went off to a small church-supported college up in South Carolina called Presbyterian College. Don't want to give away any denomination, but that's where I went. I went up there with the full intention of majoring in religion and going to seminary. Most of y'all have figured out I'm not a man of the cloth. 2 years later, or 4 years later, I'm matriculated with a degree in business management and a full-blown case of alcoholism. No doubt in my mind, I crossed that invisible line, and those invisible lines are hard to see, y'all. But I crossed it at least my sophomore year when I was 20, when I had a really bad experience, and I knew that bad experience was because I hadn't had enough to drink the night before. And I wasn't ever going to get caught without alcohol again. And if I didn't go to a class, I was going to outfit my trunk with alcohol. And it was about there just like a spare tire for emergency use only. But it was back there for that. When I went to Tim about step three. I sincerely thought that when I said, God, I offer myself to Thee, just those first words, I ain't going through the whole prayer, just when I said those, He was going to say to me, what? Again? How many times have we been, had this dance in your life? And Tim, my minister, told me this. He said, Charlie, he said, you have children? I said, you know I do. You baptize them. He said, do you love them? I said, you know I do. He said, if your kids came to you every day and said, Dad, because we love you, we're going to do our best today to obey you, honor you, and respect you. Would you ever get tired of your kids saying that? And I said, no. He won't either. He won't either. And he still doesn't. Because through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, particularly steps 6 and 7, I used to be conceited, but now I'm perfect, right? Then I got to the monumental task that we all know it's time to quit and leave Alcoholics Anonymous when we go to get to step 4. That's the backbreaker, y'all.
Yes.
Golly. They asked us to inventory 3 things. Wow, that's pretty complicated. 3. Resentments. Fears. Sexual misconduct / harm done others. When I get a little reluctance from some of my sponsees to engage in that activity, sometimes I'll tell them this. I don't care how far along you are in the program. I can stand you up right now and tell you to tell me your top 3 resentments. And they'll come off the top of your head like that. Same thing with fears. Same thing with the others. Because that's the stuff, at least for me, my alcohol tried to push down. So that it wouldn't be up here driving me crazy all day long. And all night long. Any of y'all ever have any sleeping problems? Any of you have any sleeping problems in sobriety? My body was so used to being shut down by chemicals, it took me the better part of a year and a half sober to just lay down and get a decent night of sleep, not toss and turn. What does that have to do with step 4? Absolutely nothing, so I guess I moved to 5. God, myself, another human being. If I want to be free, there's a guy in our group that says, how free do you want to be? Do you only want to be wearing one handcuff? You know, how free do I want to be? And because of that, for a long time, I feel like I've lived my life like an open book. Now, I ain't proud of every page that's in the book. Don't misunderstand that. But ain't nothing left to hide. Nothing left to hide. 6 and 7. Over time, to me, this is, for me, the fulcrum point of long-term sobriety. The fulcrum point. And the reason I say that is all of those who tell us to read the first 164 pages. Read the first 164 pages. I'm a little bit different now, Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't really agree with that. 2/3 of books are stories, which is where we set our identity with one another. And I often say to my guys when they get on the 164 diatribe, Working with others is the last chapter that deals with the 12 steps. Just take a guess who Wives was written to. Take a guess to employers who it was written to. The family afterwards. A vision for you. It's not steps, but it's a vision. It's a benediction. It's a going forward. And the funny thing about 6 and 7 is that y'all all know it's on page 76 and there's only two paragraphs and one of them's a prayer. And the book has spent so much time and so much detail all the way from 1 through 5 that all of a sudden we look at that and say, couldn't be that big a deal. One paragraph and then a prayer. No big deal. Right? Then we turn to page 76 in the 12 and 12 after Bill had 15 additional years to contemplate things and says, the chief activator of my defects of character are self-centered fear. Either I'll fail to get that which I demand or lose something I already have. And let me tell you what, my drinking has gone away, my obsession has gone away, my fears and my resentments have gone away. Sometimes you can fool an out-of-town crowd, but my defects ain't gone away. Some of them have, and the book gives some hints like that, but some of them we might expect partial improvement. Some of them might be removed. Some of them seemingly won't budge the status quo. And then the mysterious new ones. But they're really not new. They've just been pushed so far down that when we scrape off some of the top sediment, they start to get more attention. And the one thing about my defects of character is this. As y'all can tell, I love to share. And my defects of character are a great pain agent. And when I'm in pain, I love to share it with you. I love to make you as miserable as I am. Steps 8 and 9. You know, sometimes when my guys get all tied around the axle, I said, well, explain it to me. I said, make a list of all people we had harmed. And became willing to make amends to them all. I mean, what do you need for me to interpret in that? I mean, that's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Make direct amends to such people wherever possible, wherever be in a place, whenever be in a time. I make it whenever I make it a time. I make it when I feel like doing it. If I make it wherever, I make it a place. And invariably, God provides a place. Or at least, ways that's been my experience. And you know, when we do that, we get to those wonderful nine-step promises that we all gush over in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know what? In my life, the fifth-step promises meant more to me than the ninth-step promises. Be alone at perfect peace and ease. I haven't been able to do that since I was 6 years old. That was bad company for me. Be able to look the world in the eye. Yeah. There's a lot of promises in that book, so don't be fooled by readings and me. There's a lot of them. They're associated with a lot of different steps. Step 10. Perseverance. The spiritual principle that I think I've worked the best. Or the most consistently in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I try all the others, but I just don't give up. I just don't stop. I just don't try to rest on my laurels. You know, when we get to 10 and 11 and 12, I've heard some people say that maintenance step. I've heard some people say they're the growth steps. I wouldn't argue either one. You know, Bill only defines, as far as I know, only defines hope in one place in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, and for the alcoholic whose hope is the growth of his spiritual condition. I can see that. But sometimes I can see the days. You know, I'm not immune to life because I got sober. You know, I'm not going to go through a litany of stuff to make you feel sorry for me as much as I'd like to. But, you know, I've had herniated discs, and I apologize to any of y'all that drugs ain't a part of my story. I just found everything I needed in alcohol until I was 16 years sober and my back went bad on me. And they carried me to the emergency room. Doctor gave me, I told him I was in recovery. He said, "Is that fine? No problem." Gave me a shot. I said, "Wow, what was that?" He said, "Morphine." My AA kicked in. All around me, the phenomenon of craving was creeping out of the walls. 3 days later, delauded. That's when I found out I was not a drug addict. Doesn't make me any more moral or ethical or anything else. It just didn't do it for me. It did not trip the trigger in the phenomenon of craving. It just did what it was supposed to do. Some of y'all may find it funny that I don't wear regular socks up here. I had some skin cancer cut off of me a few months ago. Fighting another cancer that a lot of men my age deal with. Got both those pieces of news within 6 weeks of one another. Kind of messed with my serenity just a piece. But not too bad. Not too bad. You know, I will say this, and I'll start the wrap down. I know y'all only gave me about 3 hours. I don't know if it's as prevalent today as it once was. My sponsors used to not only cure me through the steps, but the traditions too. And that we also kind of muddled our way through the 12 concepts of world service. And the traditions are vitally important. And you know, when I was brand new in the program, they used to tell me to take the steps down off the wall and put them into my life. And I didn't understand that. It didn't make sense to me at the time, but I think, at least my experience has been, if you're in this program and you've worked the steps, at some point in time, the steps start working me. I don't set out to say I'm going to do this. Something happens and I say, "Oh, I'm powerless over that." If I allow it, I can make it my life unmanageable. I can develop an obsession about this, and I can fix it myself instead of God. And I can get in a situation where I'm working the steps backwards. Right? We talk about working the steps going this way. I can work them backwards. Get back to one in honesty. It's a spiritual principle. I've worked myself back to step one. Well, I ain't made much progress because I was on step zero when I got to y'all. But the traditions, I can do the same thing. Right? Guy in our group, I used to love him. He would sit there and say, "Tradition 10. Traylor Johnson ought to have no opinion on outside issues." Hence, Traylor's name will never be drawn into public controversy. And there are a lot of things like that we can do. But I'd really like to devote this last hour to the 12 concepts. Believe that, don't you? Two things and I'll wrap. Keep in mind, the prepaid was free. Nobody got cheated in this talk. You got what you paid for. My sponsor, somewhere along in there, can't remember exactly when, but I had God kind of just shows up with the same lesson over and over and over again till I learn it. Somewhere in my sobriety, I picked up a book by a guy named Charles Colson, who went to jail as a result of Watergate, and he founded this thing called Prison Ministry. And I read his book, and I was pretty impressed with it, and so, you know, I pulled out the little card and sent a little donation and started getting on the mailing list, and all of a sudden, every time I turn around, jail, prison. Then the grapevine comes out. How many of y'all still buy and keep the hard copy of the grapevine? Ooh. Then the prison issue comes out in the summer. So I'm talking to my sponsor about this, and he says, I got great news for you. The corrections committee is open. Chair is open for the district. What's our favorite words in AA that we give when we're asked to do something for the first time? I want you to chair the meeting. Oh, I can't. I ain't ready. Guess who was the district committee? Correction chairman. Went through the process, getting certified by the state of Georgia. Carried meetings behind the walls for about somewhere between 6 and 7 years. If any of you do corrections work, I am going to give you one hint. Don't go in there the week of Thanksgiving and have your topic be gratitude. That's not a good topic in prison week of Thanksgiving and Christmas. But what happens? I loved everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Even if you gossip about me. Even if you judge me. I know you judge me. Y'all are judging me right now. I'm keenly aware of it. If you want what we have, doesn't that ask us to make a judgment? Doesn't it? Doesn't use the word, but doesn't it use, isn't that the concept? So what happened to me in the prisons, I got after a while, after the early discomfort, because I'd never had the privilege to this point in my life of being locked up. That's a not yet. But what happened was, in there I could, regardless of the surrounding, the uniforms, everything else, I could look out there and see from the Adam's apple up another hurting child of God that just needed help. Let me tell you, that probably did as much or more for me in my sobriety as any amount of helping people in the regular AA set really did. And I always try to end it this way, which is, and this is where the memory starts to bug me. Somebody asked a friend of mine a long time ago what the two greatest commandments are. He said, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, And the second one is like that. You should love your neighbor as yourself. Pretty sure I'm right about this. I'm not young. Correct me afterwards. My memory tells me it was in 1950. Cleveland, first international convention. And Dr. Bob was in the throes of very declining health, wouldn't live much longer. And they asked him to come up to speak. And here's where the 70-year-old memory kicks in, but he got up and he said, I'm going to paraphrase because it was roughly something like this. He says, when I sit here today and look out at everything that's in front of me, the literature, the fellowship, all the other things that is AA, I would like to think that some small thing I did any number of years ago may have helped this. He said, but when you get down to the bottom line of AA, you can boil it down to two words, love and service. And I saw that being a perfect fit to those two commandments that my friend had talked about. And I thank you for bearing with me. And now y'all can get on to some real recovery-based activity. Thanks for letting me share.